Are you ready for the quantum age?
Humanity's next step in evolution?
Dream Vision 7 Radio Network invites you to the extraordinary platform of evolutionary voices for the quantum age.
Let's explore. Learn more about this upcoming age where we bridge science with spirituality.
Where potentiality meets reality.
Where we take compassion into action.
Our trailblazers and visionaries will ask the whys, the what ifs, while igniting continuous possibility.
Come along with us into an age beyond what we know today, where we can grow together in unity consciousness.
Experience evolutionary voices for the quantum age Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on DreamVision7Radio.com. Welcome to What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley, inviting you to open to the radical notion that in your life, whatever you perceive to be in your way is the way. In other words, your challenges, whether they be relationships, compulsions, finances, or illness, come with gifts embedded in them that can bring healing and allow you to experience the joy of being fully alive. Mary is a counselor, awakening mentor, inspirational speaker, and the author of What's in the Way is the Way, The Gift of Our Compulsions, Belonging to Life, and The Magical Gift of Aliveness. What's in Your Way is the Way with Mary O'Malley is part of Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
To What's in Your Way is the Way. I'm your host, Mary O'Malley. And today we're exploring what blocks the deep nourishment of self-acceptance. I have had the wonderful grace of exploring with people on their journey of awakening for over 30 years. And there's something that I've noticed that we all have in common. And that is, we all carry a deep core wound. You could call it unworthiness. You could call it the feeling of being less than. You could call it being flawed. It can go as deep as I am not only bad, but I am wrong. And this all takes us to this place where we feel so alone. That is why in What's in the Way is the Way, in the eight core spells, at the last spell, the eighth spell, the spell that all the other spells take us to, is that feeling that I am all alone. And as I've shared before, it's just amazing in English, alone is A-L-O-N-E. And if you separate it out, it's all one. So here we are. We've all taken on this core wound, and many people, most of the time, are not even aware of it. They're just busy searching and seeking and trying to get more or better of everything. And, you know, you can find a wonderful mate, and you can get the job of your dreams, and you can kind of fool yourself that this feeling of deep unworthiness, of being less than, it kind of goes underground. But then, when things don't happen the way we want them to, you know, we get demoted at the job. We find our mate has had an affair. We get a very difficult diagnosis. Or our child is having great challenges at school. this is when this deep belief that is hidden at the core of our being can come rushing up to the surface. When one of my children's cancer returned for the second time, and they took him within an inch of his life in order to bring him back to life. You know, it was so challenging. And for years, this belief of that I am flawed and unworthy, I had brought so much awareness and so much space to it that every once in a while it would start talking, but I would right away tuck it into my heart. But during this time when he was so ill, it would come more often. And yet, thankfully, because of my deep curiosity and my coming home to my heart, I wouldn't get caught into it. But it reminded me of how deep and painful this core wound is. How it causes us to be so mean to ourselves, so merciless with ourselves. So, where did this come from? Well, we have explored before how it came from our childhood. They say that your view of yourself and your view of life was pretty well formed by the time you were six. And here you are when you arrive out of mystery and you are here. There are no stories in your head that say you need to be any different than what you are. You just are. But most of us were raised by unconscious giants, people that took on their parents' confusion and deep sense of unworthiness and the feeling of being separate from life and all alone. And then their parents had taken it on for their parents and so on and so forth back through the eons. And so we had no choice. We kind of absorb these deep spells from our parents, you know, just like we absorbed language. And we didn't know any better. You know, the other thing that we have talked about before is how a child is the center of the universe. You know, it doesn't have a deeply, doesn't comprehend other. And so when things are off in our families, which they are in every single family, then the child assumes that they are to blame. And that's why that study that I've shared before, you know, children up to the age of 12, if they are going through a divorce in their family, that they all believed that they caused the divorce, even if their parents said they didn't. So you can begin to see that we were like, you know, lumps of soft clay, and slowly and surely we were molded and shaped by the experiences of our lives, by the undercurrents. You know, not just by the things that happen to us, but the undercurrents, because children are much more aware of the energy that is going on. I love to say that if our parents were arguing in a soundproof room down in the basement and we were up in the attic, we could feel it. We may not understand it, but we could feel it. And this is the place where we began to absorb these deep beliefs. And then you add to it that we need our parents for survival. You know, oh my God, I mean, you know, the studies they've done of children in orphanages and how they would die without connection. You know, and we can survive on just a little tiny bit of connection, but we need it for survival. And so when we don't get the minimum daily requirement for connection, because most of us didn't, because our parents weren't fully here. They were lost in their heads because they took on the conditioning from their parents when they were young. Then we start becoming what we think we should be in order to purchase this connection that is necessary for survival. And so just feel how this lump of soft clay you were slowly and surely gets molded and shaped, and then it gets fired. And it gets hard, and it holds that shape. You even can't, manipulate it anymore into a different shape. And that's what happened to all of us. The other way I like to describe this is that, when we were born, oh, my God, we were just wide open and here. And slowly and surely, as we absorb the spells that were in our world, we put on a fractured pair of glasses. Now, I don't know if you have a pair of glasses that the lens is fractured, or a pair of sunglasses somebody has stepped on. But if you do, I invite you to go put them on. And if you don't, just imagine what that would be like to look at the world through a fractured pair of glasses. It would make it warped. It would make it weird. So that's what happened to us. And boy, for most of us, this fractured pair of glasses is just glued to our face. We don't know any different. But it wasn't just the experiences that we had in those first 6 years of our life that formed our view of ourselves and of our lives. It is also our collective mind, our collective beliefs. Carl Jung called them the archetypical beliefs that form our view of ourselves and our view of life. And one of the most important beliefs comes from religion. In the West, the foundation of why we are so screwed up and separate from life comes from the story of Adam and Eve. And you don't even have to be religious to be influenced by this story. So here was Adam, and he was in the Garden of Eden, which is this moment, which is the experience of grounding and opening beyond the spells into life as it is. And God said, oh, you could just hang out here and have a wonderful time, but please do not eat from the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. So then, most of the Bible was filtered through men. And then Eve all of a sudden showed up from one of Adam's ribs, to be his companion. And it's interesting, to just see what has come out of that. Oh, my God, there's so many places in the Old Testament where, the woman is the spawn of the devil, and we shall not let any woman preach or stand over a man, because the men were the right ones and the women were defiled and less than. We're just barely coming out of that belief. But anyway, I get distracted here. So here they are, and they're hanging out in the garden, and they're innocent. They're not embarrassed by their nakedness. They are not embarrassed by who they are. They didn't take on that unworthiness that we take on in the first 6 years of our life. But then a serpent comes and says, oh, Eve, yes, you can eat of this fruit, of the knowledge of the tree of good and evil. And so she did eat from this forbidden tree, and then she gives some of the fruits to Adam. You know, again, the woman is to blame. It's interesting to note that in the Islamic interpretation of this story, both Adam and Eve were a part of this falling from grace, of eating of the knowledge of the tree of good and evil, of the eating of this, getting lost in our minds that are dualistic, good, bad, right, wrong. And this closes our hearts, and it cuts us off from the heaven, from the Garden of Eden that is always right here, right now. And then God says that the consequences of you disobeying, you know, his order is that you will be banished from the garden. You will take on this core belief that I have found in everybody that I've been with for the last 30 some odd years, this belief of being separate from our home. Being separate because we feel that there is something wrong with us. This is a secretly held belief. Most people aren't even aware of how much it influences them in their daily life. But the fascinating thing is in the religions of the East, in Hinduism and Buddhism, they don't have this, oh my God, you are to blame. You screwed up, and that's why you're separate from your home. And so they believe that this separation comes from forgetfulness. It comes from ignorance. And so Pema Chodron, in her book, The Wisdom of No Escape, Pema is a just amazingly wonderful Buddhist nun, one of the first American women that became a Buddhist nun, and then she started her own monastery, and she has written many, many books, and they instantaneously go to the New York Times bestseller list because she makes Buddhism, she has a more spacious, more heart-oriented view of Buddhism than most of the people that have offered it to the world. And she says in The Wisdom of No Escape, the innocent mistake that keeps us caught in our own particular style of ignorance, of unkindness, and shut downness is that we are never encouraged to see clearly what is with gentleness. Instead, there is a kind of basic misunderstanding that we should try to better ourselves, try to be better than we already are, that we should try to improve ourselves, that we should try to get away from the painful things, and if we just could learn to get away from the painful things, then we would be happy. This is the innocent, naive misunderstanding that we all share. So in the first part of that, she really describes what happens when we fall into this belief, into this spell, that we are not okay as we are. We need to better or different than what we are, and then we are off to the races, searching and seeking, and every once in a while coming to the place of, only to have the mind take over again. And so she says, you know, this innocent mistake catches us into ignorance. ignorance of who we really are. Unkindness. Oh my God, this belief then causes us to be so cruel with ourselves. And she says, shut downness. That is so very important because, you know, it does shut us down. We become human doings rather than human beings. You know, we are tight and disconnected and always searching and seeking. So, what do we do with this deep spell that we all carry? We frantically, we try to get ourselves together. And then when it doesn't work, we fall short of the mark. We get terribly busy trying to get it all together, or we eat the thing, or drink the thing, or smoke the thing, in order to numb out from this heartache that comes from this belief that we are not okay as we are. Take a moment and just notice what's going on with your belly. We're talking about something that we usually want to stay hidden, but it's only when we bring it to the surface, it's only when we can begin to see how much we believe we're not okay as we are, that we can begin to heal. And so, if you can, just soften your belly. Allow a deeper out-breath. And allow that breath to go down into your body, to begin to open that tightness that you carry most all the day long. So, how do we heal this deep spell? First of all, recognize that you've got it. It's like a virus that we've all taken on. You have it. You may be in a phase in your life where everything is going the way you want it to, and it kind of lies dormant, but it is there nonetheless. And the next thing is to understand we all have it. You know, work I do is it creates the space in order for people to be real about what they are really truly experiencing underneath the facade, underneath the personality. You know, the root word of personality is persona, which means mask. And I want you to really hear, we all have this belief, and it fuels our everyday. It fuels us. It influences us from underneath our everyday awareness. The second thing is to begin to realize that maybe, just maybe, if you made a list of all the things about yourself that you were not okay with, maybe that view, that fractured pair of glasses that causes you to look at yourself as an ongoing project rather than a human being, maybe, just maybe, these beliefs are not true. I know. I took on these beliefs to the extent that I barely survived them. You know, that's why I tried to kill myself 3 times, because my fractured pair of glasses said that I was a worthless human being. And that's what happens to children that are really deeply bruised when they are growing up, that don't have one person that looks at them in their eyes and say, I love you. You know, that's when a child begins to shrivel. You begin to contract. I was so unbelievably shy because I was frozen. I was just frozen. And so I want to give you a story out of my life that can help you to begin to see that just maybe all of those things that you think are bad and wrong about yourself are not true. So I lived in a family that my mother was a true paranoid, and my father was a full-blown narcissist. And so he was in competition with his brother to have the first male child so that he could use the family name for the male child. And my mother was pregnant and gave birth to my sister, who was the first grandchild, so she was just adored. And then my mother got pregnant, and again with me, and 2 months later my aunt got pregnant. And so it was absolutely necessary to my father that I be a boy. And my godmother told me years later, my mother had told me this, but I never knew, you know, what she was saying was true or not, because she oftentimes exaggerated. But my godmother told me this years ago that they had a horrible fight at the hospital because I was not a boy. And, of course, 2 months later, my aunt gave birth to a boy and he got the name. So how did my father deal with this? He had nothing to do with me. I can't ever remember him even speaking to me in the 12 years that we lived together. Can you imagine what that does to a girl child, that her father is her first prince, you know, her first love, and for a healthy girl child to come into her own being, it is really essential that she is adored by her father. And I got the opposite. And so my older sister was quite beautiful and with long legs, and you know, my father was a leg man, and he just let me know silently that I just fell far short of the mark. So fast forward into my 20s. And for years, I never wore makeup, and I never went to get a haircut. I would just, you know, flip my hair over my shoulder and then just trim it. Because if I did those two things, I would have to look into a mirror. And when I looked into the mirror, I saw ugliness. Now, I don't have an ugly face. But the fractured pair of glasses, the conditioning that I absorbed when I was growing up, that conditioning said without a shadow of a doubt that I was ugly. And so that is what I saw in the mirror. Isn't that amazing? That's how strong conditioning can be. And so we fast forward now into my 30s, and my mentor came into my life who really, truly made a difference in my life. You know, for the first 3 years I was working with her, I was sure whenever I went out there, the door would be locked because I just couldn't imagine how she kept on dealing with this nauseating human being. And thank God the door was not locked. And she said one day, you know, you have a nice face. And I could just feel myself kind of shrivel. And the next time I accidentally saw my face, I saw the ugliness. And I was so mad at her. And I went back and said, don't do that therapy thing about saying nice things to me to make me feel better, but they're not true. So, the next time, the first time I saw my face was when I was, it was probably, 37, 38, and I had my bed under the window so I could see the stars, and I was, you know, just snuggled in bed, and I was done reading, and I reached over my shoulder to turn on the light, and I saw a face in the window. And my conditioning, the fractured pair of glasses, didn't have a chance to configure. And so I really saw my face as it was, not how my conditioning told me that it was. And it so stunned me, I cried. What I saw in that moment, in that experience, was how deeply I had been trained to believe that not only my face, but everything about me was less than. And I didn't, you know, begin to always see my face in the mirror. The old conditioning would still configure at times. But I had this moment, I had this experience that began to allow me to see that there was another way to see myself. And as that began to happen, oh my God, and this just brings tears as I'm talking, I began to see how locked out of my own heart I was. Not only around my face, but about everything about myself. You know, I came from a family where everybody went and graduated from college, and I went to college. But I left college and ended up in my second mental hospital, not because there was something mentally wrong with me, but because I was living a broken, broken heart, and I was completely frozen, and I believed that that was all happening in my life because there was something deeply bad and wrong about me. But I truly believed not only I was ugly, not only that I was less than everybody else, but also that I was stupid. And it was a startling realization as books began to write themselves through me that maybe I wasn't smart in book learning like the rest of my family, but I had savvy. And so that was another one of the deep spells that I began to see through that comes from this core belief that we all carry, these fractured pair of glasses that we put on, that we need to be different than what we are because at the core of ourselves, we are not okay. So these beliefs are very, very powerful, and they are very deeply embedded inside of us. And I used to say the voice inside of me that always put me down went to law school and graduated top in his class and was president of the debate club. But none of them, as I began to look at them, none of them were true. And this wonderful thawing of my heart, I began to realize that, yes, I had done a lot of unskillful things in my life. I had deeply hurt myself. I had hurt other people. And yet, I was always doing the best that I knew how with the conditioned mind, with the fractured pair of glasses that I took on before I had any choice about whether to take this on or not. I want you to begin to feel imagine a completely closed heart, and then imagine the heart beginning to say, yes, you have done extremely unskillful things, but you were always doing the best that you knew how with the conditioning that you were given. So slowly and surely, my heart began to open again. My heart had been so closed because I had been taught to look at myself, not through my heart, but through this less than idea. And the prison walls around my heart began to fall away as I began to explore. You know, that experience with my face taught me that just maybe all of these unmerciful beliefs about myself, just maybe they weren't true. So that's when I began to look at them, explore them. I carried a notebook around because I knew that what I needed to do was get to know this judging quality, because that was what kept me locked out of my own heart. And I began to write down, you know, I said to myself, I want to get to know this judging quality. And the judger says, I don't judge you. So I carried a notebook around, and whenever I noticed it was speaking, I would write down what it said. And then I put it on this big piece of newsprint with this, you know, circle, and then with all these spokes that went into the center. And in the center was the heart, the true self. And then on these spokes, I wrote all these beliefs. And I lived on the outside of the wheel. Can you imagine what it's like to live on the outside of the wheel? Oh, my God. You know, it's just terribly horrible place to live. But I began to get to know. I began to explore this conditioning that lived as a storyteller in my head, then told me stories all day long that came from this belief that I needed to be different than what I was. And so what Pema Chodron says in The Wisdom of No Escape is this healing, this coming home to our heart is about seeing clearly what is, seeing ourselves, seeing the kind of body we have without rejecting it, the kind of mind, the kind of, you know, family we have, the kind of job we have. But it's about so much more than that. It's about seeing how we react to all these things. It's about seeing our emotional nature and our thoughts, the stories in our head as they are right now in this very moment. She goes on to say it's not about trying to make them go away, not about trying to become better than what we are, but just seeing clearly with precision and with gentleness. I was exploring with somebody yesterday that had really just come into awakening, and a very wonderful woman with a sharp mind. But she had immediately gotten caught in this whole thing that is oftentimes there in Buddhism, that, you know, you have to meditate many hours a day, and you have to free yourself from attachments. And I could just watch her getting tighter and tighter and tighter. And I offered her the possibility, rather than trying to get free from attachments, which is just more struggle, is begin to explore them. Begin to get to know them. So what I'm offering here today is a little crack. It's a little opening a little opening to take off the fractured pair of glasses for a moment here and a moment there, and begin to be fascinated by what the storyteller is talking about in your head. Because what Pema says is that this desire to change ourselves is fundamentally a form of aggression. Just let that in. This whole belief that we need to be different than what we are, we beat ourselves up with it, or we just spend our time endlessly seeking and searching for something better, not knowing this cuts us off from this moment, which is our home, which holds everything that we deeply long for. The last thing I'll share that Pema says is the problem is, you know, this need to get rid of all this. The problem is that unfortunately or fortunately, our hang-ups contain our wealth. In other words, what is in your way is the way. All these things you've been trying to get rid of about yourself and about your life is the rich fertilizer. If you begin to learn how to explore, how to have a few moments every morning that you just ground right here, you hear the sound of the birds, or you smell your morning cup of tea, or you sit quietly and have your attention rest in the rising and the falling of your breath. Just a few minutes a day begins to help you see that there is life, and then there is your stories about life. And that's when you begin to want to be able to explore these stories, because most of them were created, the foundations inside of you before you were six. And they are the fractured pair of glasses that cause you to struggle so much in your life. And so what's in your way is the way. In other words, you're nutty as a fruitcake, and that is okay. So where does this take you? Well, one of my Hawaii retreats theme was all is welcome here, and that's what we're talking about, is having moments where you don't fight with what is, but you begin to explore it. You begin to get to know it. And it was Socrates that said, know thyself. And a woman came in the middle of the retreat, because I put signs all over the retreat center, and she said, you know what I see when I look at that sign? All is well. Come here. Just let that in. Maybe, just maybe, this struggle that you've lived in is just conditioning. And maybe, just maybe, as you see through it, you begin to come back to the great flow of life. And you begin to see what Carl Jung said, in every disorder there is a secret order. In other words, we can begin to trust life. So I invite you not to wait until a tragedy comes. That's usually what happens when we wait until a tragedy comes. You know, we're on our deathbed, or, you know, we have just lost our job, and we have gotten very ill, and our mate has just died. Usually it's these great, great challenges that can begin to fracture the fractured pair of glasses. They can begin to invite us to take them off and realize that everything we've longed for is always been right here. So what begins to happen when you begin to see through the fractured pair of glasses and you come home to your heart? You will see that love is. You will see that there is a world right beyond the struggles of your mind. But know that the fractured glasses are very strong. And it can be very helpful as you are journeying through this place where you begin to see the fractured pair of glasses and you begin to take them off more and more, to begin to sing to yourself, Amazing Grace. This song that was, the words were written by John Newton, and he was conscripted into the Royal Navy, England's Royal Navy, and after leaving the service, he became involved in the Atlantic slave trade. And in a violent storm in 1748, off of Ireland, he was really, truly, afraid he was going to die. And he called out to God for mercy. And in a moment, in a flash, he saw through all of the struggle that he had lived, all the self-hate he had lived because he was in the slave trade. And this began to change his life. Not right away. He still did slaving for a number of years. But he ultimately left that and got very involved in the church and became an Anglican clergyman. He, in this song, spoke about that moment, that tragedy that woke him up. And we don't have to wait for a tragedy to crack open this armoring around our heart, to take off the fractured pair of glasses. So I just invite you to listen to these words. I know you probably have sung this song, many, many times. But I spent some time this morning with these words, and they're so profound. Amazing grace. How sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. I once was lost, but now am found. 'Twas blind, but now I see. This is what we're talking about today. We are blind. We think we are a wretch. But grace, the grace of hearing this message, the grace of beginning to explore the armoring around your heart, all these deep beliefs in your storyteller that say you need to be different than what you are in order to be okay. So he goes on to say, this is a very interesting part of the song, 'twas grace that taught my heart to fear, and grace my fears relieved. Wow. So grace took us into this world of fear and unworthiness and being separate from life. But grace also can lift that from us. Grace my fears relieved. How precious did that grace appear that hour I first believed, when he was cracked open. So then the last stanza, through many dangers, toils, and snares, we have already come. 'Twas grace that brought us safe thus far, and grace will lead us home. And so, yes, we've been through many, many dangers, toils, and snares of these fractured pair of glasses, of this conditioned mind that is like a cloud bank around our head that cuts us off from being fully here in this moment. What happens as you begin to take off the glasses? You begin to meet yourself more in your own heart. You were locked out of your heart because of all of these beliefs. And you soften. You relax more into life. You can see through blaming, judging, rejecting. And this all really begins inside of you, but the more that you come home to your own heart, the less you judge others, the less you blame others, the less you reject others, because you know even if they most deeply hurt you, that they were caught, that they were doing the best that they knew how with the conditioning that they have been given. And I eventually came to that place with my father, who, when I was 12, and they got a divorce and we began to spend every other weekend with him, that's when the sexual abuse started. And when I first started working with Stephen Levine, my main mentor, I had a dream, and I was standing in the kitchen of the house that we moved into after the divorce, and my mother was leaning against the stove, and I turned to her and said, "Do you know that I am the Earth Awakening?" And she said, "No." And my father was sitting down, leaning against the island, and I said, "Do you know that I am the Earth Awakening?" I crouched down, and he said, "Yes." And I said, "Do you know that you were the most perfect father for me on this journey of awakening?" And he began to cry, and I began to cry. And then the dream ended. So I had let myself into my own heart. Well, it's a work in progress. It was at that point. It's not anymore. But then I could also let my father into my heart. I no longer hated him. I no longer lived in that corrosive, not only anger, but deep despair that I was so thoroughly rejected by him. And so my experience of all of life was much more through my own heart. One of my favorite joys is to go out and run errands, because you just connect, you know, of all the 7 billion people on this planet, you know, that person, you know, I get the good grace to be with that person, with the receptionist at the vet, you know, with the, you know, man at the car repair place, you know, with the person that I'm standing in line in. I have some wonderful connections with people standing in line. Why? Because I'm here. And most of the time, not all the time, I connect with the world through my heart. So I invite you to have the courage. And remember, the root word for courage means big heart. I invite you to have the courage to begin to see that you do carry a fractured pair of glasses that says that who you are and maybe the color of your skin and your gender and your, you know, whatever, your sexual preference or, you know, something that you did, you know, when you were, you know, 8 years old. I was talking to a man once who was raised by two flaming alcoholics. The father had left when he was six, but for 6 years he got the brunt of this father that would just beat him unmercifully, and then he would, and then the mother would also, and the mother, you know, would just, you know, say, "You are worthless and a piece of human shit," you know. And it took him a long time, but in one of our times together, he said, "I want to share something with you." And he could hardly get it out. It was just choking on his words because he was so ashamed. And he said, "When I was 8 years old, I not only kill the pigeon, but I brutalize this pigeon. And I have never told anybody this before. And he was crying and holding his breath and catching his breath. And then I said to him, you know, you just did to the pigeon what was done to you. And in that moment, something opened inside of him. And now he cried different tears. The tears of beginning to let himself back into his own heart. And so, if it is challenging for you to even contemplate this, because it can be, remember, you know, my judger went to law school and graduated top in his class and was president of the debate club. I really, truly believed everything it said about me. I don't anymore. Every once in a while, and I'm really tired and have a full schedule, those voices will come. They're a part of me. But I tuck them right into my heart because I know they're not true. I looked at them, and I discovered that they weren't true. And so if it's difficult for you, imagine doing this for all your children or your grandchildren or your nieces and nephews or just the children of the world. Because the more you can meet yourself in your own heart, the more you become a part of the healing of our planet. Thank you so much for listening to this and absorbing it into you so that you can come home to your heart.
Thank you for listening to this edition of What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley. You can access Mary's offerings on her websites, maryomalley.com and whatsintheway.com. Join Mary next time to experience the peace and joy that is always with you on Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.
This is Dream Vision 7 Radio Network, uniting mankind with universal love. Our shows are created from the heart, bringing each listener to a place of divine enlightenment. Breathe, relax, and enjoy. Let life flow.